This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
And you're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 with Claudine and Rachel every Thursday night from 8 until 9. So I had to do a dig in there, Rachel.
Yes, you did.
And tonight we've got a guest in the studio, Nur from Mahaba Melbourne, a support group for LGBTI Muslims, which celebrates their second anniversary this week. And we'll be speaking to him very soon.
And you're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. And tonight we have a very special guest from Mahaba Melbourne in the studio with us. So if you have any questions for Nur, please send us a text on 0427 Joy 949, or send an email to onair@joy.org.au, or let us know if you've got any comments about what we're talking about. There is some very interesting topics on hand tonight. So, Nur, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It is our absolute pleasure. So can you tell us why Mahaba was formed?
Well, we started about 2 years ago. We'll be celebrating our second birthday this week. There was a vacuum in the support services for Muslim LGBTIQs for quite some time. And I have been active as a religious leader in Melbourne for about 15 years. And it has been a personal struggle of mine as well. So I wanted to fill that vacuum. About 2 years ago, I got a call from a school counselor that was counseling a young girl who felt like a boy trapped in a girl's body. And she was very young, and the parents sat her down, somewhat of an intervention they had with her, and they sort of told her that, you know, not only will God be not accepting her prayers, but he will be cursing her if she prayed with those feelings.
Wow.
And the counselor called to ask a theological question to me if that was a true thing. I said, heck no, and I wanted to do something about it. And from my little humble lounge room, I started Marhaba. And
wow,
it has been going amazing since then.
That's great. So what is the meaning behind Mahaba?
You know, I wanted to choose something that had nothing to do with religion, because as a Muslim, religion generally traumatizes a lot of LGBT IQ Muslims. So I didn't want nothing to do with religion when I was choosing the name. So Marhaba in Arabic means welcome. So, and I have some Arab friends who always, whenever they come visit me, they say Marhaba. So hence the name.
Beautiful. Yeah. It has a nice ring to it as well. Obviously, I wasn't pronouncing it as beautifully as you did, but it is a very beautiful word. So what kind of support does Marhaba provide to its members?
We, as a person who has had a background in the religious field, what I do myself is try to help our members reconcile their faith with their sexuality, which is a very difficult thing always to do.
I can imagine.
If you belong to one of the Abrahamic religions. But I try to sort of provide a psycho-spiritual counseling where possible. Also, I look at myself as a facilitator at times as well. I refer people on to services where they may benefit from.
Yeah.
So mental health practitioners. And a lot of health professionals have been very supportive since we've started the group.
Great.
So, yeah, it has been fantastic.
So do you see yourself as somewhat of a counselor yourself to the members of the group, or are you just there to pat them on the back and then refer them on? What do you see your position as in the group?
See, I put my what's called the imam's hat on. Imam in the Muslim world is similar to a priest. You know, for them to find someone that tells them in a leadership position to say it's okay for you to be going through what you're going through, and you know, there is a way to reconcile the two. That in itself gives a lot of hope to many people. So I'm not a counselor, I'm a spiritual leader as such, and I try to use that hat to make a difference, if not change.
So do you have regular meetings or like gatherings so that the members of the group can network with each other as well and get support from each other?
The dynamics of the group are, you know, very big. We have as young as 16-year-old and as old as a 70-year-old great-grandfather called one not too long ago. So we meet, we try to meet generally once a month.
Yep.
And when I started the group, I wanted to do something tangible where people could call in or come into a place and try to find what they cannot find at home, because a lot of Muslim LGBTIQs cannot be themselves at home or in places of festivals and things like that. So we try to give that alternative. So we try to meet once a month. We try to do the Eid festivals. We have the Eid festivals twice a year. And we don't, you know, the Muslim community is very dynamic, as I said. So some of them are religious. So some of them are not. Some of them want to pray at times. Some of them don't want to pray at all.
Yeah.
So to find a common ground to serve them all is been very interesting thus far. But it's been very fruitful.
That's awesome. So can you share any experiences or challenges that the members of the group may be facing in the community? So as you said, there's obviously the challenges would be so different between somebody who's 16 years old and still at school and living under their parents' roof to someone who is in their 70s. Like, what are some examples of challenges that these members of the group face?
A lot of it is traumatic. I mean, since we've started the group, no one has called and said or came into the group and said, look, my life is very well and I have reconciled Islam with my sexuality. We haven't had. But so mental health is very common amongst our members. Addiction is common. There is self-harm at times. So that's why where the health professionals come in handy.
Definitely.
And I refer them on.
So do you find that their struggles are more often within their families or within their communities? Like where would you say the source of their pain comes from?
Primarily it's the family. Second is the community. Because the conservative Islamic view on, you know, gender diversity is death. You can't be gay. Yeah. So, and to find a common ground from that extreme view to the other is challenging, but it has been, I have been able to do it because I studied Islamic theology and there is ways around it, you know?
Yeah. So do you find that it's coming out that's harder for them, or just knowing that they can't come out because their families? So is it the before they come out or the after they come out that you find affects them the worst? But I can it would be different for everyone, I guess.
Both. I mean, I don't in our, I think one of the last meetings, the last Eid festival we had, this question came up, you know.
Yeah.
Should we tell our parents? Or we had one chap who had his psychologist telling him, this is a mental health worker, but not neutral. He said, you got to tell your family.
Yeah.
So I said, don't, because in the Muslim tradition, the consequences of coming out to your family and the community can be very severe. You almost lose everything. And not only that, you have at times, as I said, a risk to your life.
Yeah.
You know? So I say to them, play your cards wisely. You know, if, and they say, why can't we come out? I said, listen, you know, they will never accept. I mean, so why would you shove something down their throat that they cannot even, they don't have the tools. Some of the parents don't have the tools to understand how even it's possible.
Yeah.
You know, so I say, play your cards wisely. Have the family connection, but at the same time, live your own life. You
definitely.
Know? And generally, the transition for these guys is never possible if they are fully immersed in the Muslim community.
Mm-hmm.
They gotta leave that. And it's been very challenging, you know, because the Muslim community is a very tight-knit community.
Yeah.
So to come out of that and find your own way.
So do a lot of people that come out then lose their faith because of that? If they're not being immersed in the community, I can imagine that.
Yeah, sadly, some have. And I have seen some of our members who said, look, I have rejected Islam, you know, because of what the family and community had made them go through.
Yeah.
So where I come in, I say is, you know, in Islam, you have a direct link with God. I said, why would you let your mother, father, you know, imam or other community members come in between you and God?
Yeah, that's so important.
And that in itself gives them hope. You know, I say other people came between you and God. So I said, you have a direct line, use that line.
Yeah, wow. And you're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. with Claudine and Rachel, and we've got a special guest tonight, Nur from Marhaba Melbourne, a support group for LGBTI Muslims in Melbourne. Nur, I was wondering if we talking a bit more about Islam in general and Islam and LGBTI people, and I guess to give us some of the background and understanding of the different views or different positions, and also knowing, like other large religions, that Islam is quite diverse in its views and also in the different countries that people come from. So where, with members of Marhaba, where are they up? Are there different backgrounds? Are they Australian born or migrants from different countries?
There's so many. There's some born here. There are migrants from Africa, Arab countries, Middle East, and so many different places. But to answer the question about the view of Islam on homosexuality and that, look, historically speaking, you know, Islam, as you said, was very diverse, and it has been, there has been some scriptural references to LGBT people in Islamic history.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason in the last 400 years, and I still haven't found why, but I'm trying to, the last 400 years, there's been a shift into a very extreme view of somewhat a patriarchal society that says, you know, if you're gay, you got to be dead.
Mm.
Has that come from a particular region or a particular school of Islam?
Yeah, there is. I mean, there's different schools of thought in Islam, and that is generally the very extreme conservative view of Islamic interpretation. And unfortunately, that is the very common one now. But look, there are countries where, you know, gay people and LGBTI are very welcome. They live freely. I mean, Indonesia is one. Mm-hmm. Indonesia, our largest, the largest Muslim country in the world, our neighbor. Turkey is one.
Mm-hmm.
And when we started the group, I didn't know this, but transgender people were actually allowed to do sex changes back in the 80s in Iran.
Oh.
In the Iran. Out of all places, in Iran.
Wow. In the 80s.
In the 80s.
So
because
after
the revolution, and the Shah apparently gave a fatwa to allow that, because the way they looked at it back then was that wasn't a choice, you're born with that.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that, but when we started the group, you know, after interneting and so forth, I found out. And Malaysia as well. Malaysia is another country that does sex changes, and they have been doing for so many years. So there are Islamic countries that do allow, and there has been a shift now around the world, you know. There is the, I mean, unfortunately, the recent Paris events are very sad. But in France, I met last year in Cape Town in South Africa, I met the imam who started the first LGBT-friendly mosque in Paris.
Wow.
So, I mean, 10, 15 years ago, you wouldn't hear about that.
Yeah.
And so slowly there is shift happening. There is a change. Spaces are being carved out. Change is happening. And
what about Australia? I mean, are there other groups like this in other states?
There is Queer Muslims Australia, which is an online Yahoo-based group. Mm-hmm. They've been around for some time now. But when we started Marhaba, I wanted, as I said, something tangible.
Physical.
So, and we have been involved with people from, you know, Sydney, Adelaide, as far as Perth. I get calls from people in Perth. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, when we started the group, our base was, my base was Melbourne. So, yeah. Hence Marhaba Melbourne. But I'm thinking we're going to change it to Marhaba Australia very soon.
So you think you might be able to form groups elsewhere?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we want to help, and we want to reach those people that are in different parts of the country. And we have been, you know, I have been speaking to guys that call in and they say, oh, I've heard about your group and I don't know how on earth in Perth, how did you hear about us, you know? So it's been very humbling to have such calls. But there's a lot of work to be done. I mean, we're still in our second year, and there's a lot of fear, right, legitimately, because, as I said, you know, if these guys, if they're found, you know, they risk to lose everything.
Mm. And are there other people in positions like yours, other imams or people with theological training who are involved in Marhaba, or is it just you?
Just me in Australia. Mm. Apparently around the world there is about 6 or 5 gay and open imams around. I reckon there's much more.
World.
In the whole world. I reckon there's much more. I met them all last year in South Africa.
Yeah.
I mean, I went to boys' boarding school and I can guarantee there's more.
But there's very few who are open.
And rightfully, because an imam, you know, you are a spiritual leader, and if you come out, you lose that title, and, you know.
So can you say a bit more about how that was for you, training as an imam, and you form this group, so that's pretty clear identity, but how much is known, and how has it been particularly difficult?
Oh, it has been very difficult. I've been the youngest imam in Melbourne for about 6 years. I have been doing this imama thing for about the 1999-2000, the days of VCE.
Right. You know?
And the reason for that was because I memorized the Quran. So we're called Hafiz. A person who memorizes the Quran is Hafiz.
Wow.
And at that time, there was only 2 of us in Melbourne.
Oh.
So it has been very difficult. You know, I come from a very strong, conservative, Somali, Islamic background. So you have to make the parents happy.
Yes.
I have a daughter. I was married. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a beautiful girl. Layla is her name. She's almost 10. But, you know, the reason I went on that path was because I was trying to please the family and the community, because there was a lot of expectation, especially from a young bull who's this religious leader. You know, you got to get married. I remember my father, in 1 month there would be 3-4 girls, this cousin, that cousin, you know. And if I didn't come up with a solution quickly, you know, I was gonna get married to someone whether I liked it or not.
It would have happened.
Yeah. So the journey has been very interesting, and that's why I wanted to take advantage of the journey that I went to. And I call myself, you know, an eternal optimist. one of my friends the other day, she said to me, "You're an idealistic fool." So I said, "Wow, that's the best compliment I got in a very long time."
Yeah.
But with difficulty, I mean, you need to go through hardship in order for you to value what you have.
Yeah.
And I know now some of the struggles the guys, when they speak, yep. You know, I spoke today with one of our members who was telling me, he said, "You know, Noor, just find me a lesbian girl." Mm. I said, "Why?" He said, "It's going to ease the pressure on me." You know, I said, "So what do you want to do?" He said, "You know, I want to just get married to her to please the family.
Yeah.
She can live her life and I can live my life." I said, "Look, I can't bless such an unauthentic lifestyle, you know."
Yeah.
And I didn't start this group to promote such ways. So I wanted to take advantage of my journey. And I had to go through that journey in order for me to find myself. I mean, yeah. A lot of our guys reject one of the two. They either reject their faith.
Yeah.
Or they do what I did. They get married, whether they like it or not, you know. So, and you got to go through that in order for you to find yourself, I think.
Yeah. Mm. And you're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. And we've been speaking with Noor tonight from Mahaba, and which is based in Melbourne. But we discussed earlier that you want to make it maybe Mahaba Australia. So where do you hope to see the organization in the future?
When we started, you know, I wanted something like a drop-in center, a library where we can educate the people in ways of using scriptural references to reconcile sexuality with faith.
Yeah.
Also, I was hoping to, in the beginning, I still do, this is one of the goals I have. I want to get a safe house.
Wow.
A lot of these guys, the transition can never be possible if they keep on going back to the family. You know, they need to find their own two feet.
Yeah.
And I just want to help empower these guys in finding their own way. So that's the goal.
Yeah.
Last night I got an email from a lawyer in Indonesia who was helping an Arab-speaking asylum seeker.
Yeah.
So even when I started the group, you know, I had Indonesia and Malaysia in my gaze, and I'm going to get there.
Yeah.
You know? So that's also a target. So there is a lot of plans, but, you know, I have my one of our co-conveners or the backbone of the group, Budi, I call Budi from the VAC. He says, "Noor, just calm down, chill. You know, you need to take this step by step." But you know, the thing is, when you have guys that are wanting to self-harm or do self-harm and want to end their lives because of conflict with family and their sexuality, or conflict between faith and sexuality, I get impatient.
Yeah, you can't sort of it's hard to just say sit back.
Yeah, but it's still, you know, this is not the type of work that you can rush into. And it's been 2 years. In this 2 years, you know, we have accomplished quite a bit. And someone said to me the other day, you know, "You gotta pat yourself in the back." I said, "I'm not gonna pat myself in the back, because there's still a lot to be done." But you know, I was in Cape Town last year. May this year, we were in Brussels. We launched the GQMN, which is the Global Queer Muslim Network.
Wow.
It's an umbrella network with about 70 odd groups that is globally speaking.
Is that a way for people in different countries to find a support group within their country? If they go to that, it's then a resource to find something local?
Yes.
Amazing.
That's great. We'll put a link to that.
Yeah. GQM. And I think their website is up. I think they have about 4 or 5 groups on there.
Great.
Don't mistake Merhaba, M-E-R. Marhaba. Ah. They are in Belgium, those ones. We are Marhaba, M-A-R. Marhaba, Melbourne.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
So going back to what we were talking about before, and you said that you want to move into Indonesia and that sort of thing. But you mentioned earlier that they have, or Indonesia and Malaysia have different views, particularly on transgender people. Do you find that people who are coming to your group are less likely to be from families who come from backgrounds from those slightly more open countries? So do you find that there are particular countries where people are coming from that their family takes it a lot worse than others?
The majority is the ones that take it worse than others.
Yeah.
So we have, I mean, I come from East Africa, so there's a lot of a large East African community here. There's a large Arab community here. And they are generally the ones who are very extreme in dealing with their children if they come out.
Yeah.
But look, with the transgender topic, you know, that for me, I find that as a way in.
Yes.
You know, they say, oh, well, that's allowed. I say, okay. That's good. Now
that's a good start,
you know. And look, parents even are jumping on board. There was a chap who came out on Facebook not too long ago, and I said, why would you do that? But he was young and testosterone and so forth. So he came out and the family were very rough with him. Mm. But I spoke with his mother, and it was very interesting, an Arab mother, who said to me, the father was very extreme, you know, oh, very rough.
Yeah.
But the mother, I was speaking to her, she said to me, Noor, I'm not going to choose anyone over my son.
Yeah.
So slowly, you know, when they see, with visibility comes comfort, I think.
Yeah. So do you think maybe seeing education or opening up the eyes of the greater Islamic community a stepping stone that you may want to take one day as well, instead of just being a support when things go bad or when people are already struggling? Do you think that maybe educating the families before their kids even, you know, are old enough to know what their sexuality is or whatnot, do you think that's somewhere that you would like to go in the future, or do you want to leave that up to another organization, start a new organization?
No, absolutely. I mean, there's PFLAG.
Yes.
I've read about them. I spoke with some of their people, and absolutely, it's something that I would want to do with the Muslim community. Because, look, when Muhammad came to the Muslims 1,400 years ago, 1,436 or 37 years ago, there were people that used to bury their daughters alive out of shame.
Mm.
You know, that's 1,400 years ago. Jahiliyyah, ignorance period, it's called. We have sort of, Muslims, unfortunately, we have turned all this time now, and we are doing a similar thing. I mean, when a mother tells her, when we started the group, when a mother tells her young daughter that if you do this, you know, God will curse you or your prayers will be cursing you, it is burying your child in a way, but not physically doing it. So the Muslim community is very open, and they're very diverse, so there is hope. I'm optimistic, and I do want to get to parents who do such things, and hopefully education is another thing that you said. Absolutely, you know, educating parents and educating the youth. Sometimes, you know, it's very difficult to get to the oldies. I love my old people, and I have absolute respect for them, but at times, you know, especially coming from an Islamic point of view, it is very difficult to get through that old way of thinking. So I don't focus at times on that. And the youth are the ones I focus on.
Yeah. Do you think generationally it will get easier? Obviously, because now people who are growing up in Australia or coming to Australia are exposed already to the LGBT community. It's quite open here in Australia. Maybe not necessarily within the Islamic community, but do you think generationally, because people have been exposed to it from a younger age now, when they grow up and have kids, even if they themselves are heterosexual, do you think that may also change the way that Islam views homosexuality just by exposure?
I hope so. And absolutely. I mean, there is, as I said, change happening. 10 years ago when I was an imam, even 14 years ago when September 11 happened, back then I don't think I would have been able to start Marhaba, because the environment was very hot, very conservative. The conservative way of thinking was almost controlling all mosques in Melbourne.
Yeah.
So you couldn't have, it was black and white. So you can have a third opinion. But yes, the hope is in the youth. And that's where I think all of our efforts should be in, educating the youth, empowering the youth.
Great.
Yeah, that's where I do my work.
Awesome. So if we've got any listeners out there tonight who are interested in becoming a member of Maharba and want to get in contact with you, how can they do that?
We don't have a website yet, but our story is published on www.federationstory.com. That's one word, /Marhaba, M-A-R-H-A-B-A. We have our email, marhaba.melbourne, marhaba.melbourne@gmail.com. We have a closed Facebook group and a Twitter account, which I monitor my first.
Excellent.
Those are our social media.
And you've been on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 every Thursday night between 8 and 9. And we've had an amazing interview tonight with Nur from Mahaba, Melbourne. And thank you so much for coming in tonight. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much for having me.
And congratulations on your second anniversary.
Yes, and enjoy your celebration dinner tomorrow night.
Thank you kindly. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.